Dr. William Luther Pierce, the year 2000. Avalanche.
Hello. It's been surprising to me how strongly the American public has responded to the media treatment of Atlanta Braves baseball pitcher John Rocker. Many people have expressed anger over the way the Jewish media and the liberals have hounded poor Rocker for simply saying what he thought about New York's wonderful multicultural diversity. I don't think the average American was as angry about the Clinton government's war against the Serbs last spring. The people who have written to me are more irritated by the ongoing abuse of John Rocker than they were by Madeleine Albright's mass murder of white women and children using our armed forces. Perhaps what's happening to Mr. Rocker now seems more real than the bombs and missiles being directed against Belgrade from the Clinton White House last year. Serbia is half a world away. New York City is all too close. Or perhaps some of the Americans who are angry about the Rocker affair have begun to understand that the Jews are planning to make every city and town and village in America look like Times Square demographically. Perhaps they have begun to understand that what the Jews have done to the white people of New York City, they intend to do to all of us. The Jews intend to continue increasing diversity until they have made a multicultural pigsty out of the whole country. Perhaps that is why so many ordinary Americans regard John Rocker as a persecuted hero. I should tell you that I see nothing heroic about John Rocker. He simply blurted out what he was thinking, and then he began groveling and apologizing as soon as the Jews jumped on him for it. If instead he had said with some degree of deliberation what he inadvertently told the Sports Illustrated reporter, and then if he had stuck to it, I would have some respect for the man now. If, when the media began demanding an apology, he had told them loudly and publicly, "Up the chimney, Jew boys," I would consider him a hero. Of course, if he had acted heroically, he would have lost his very lucrative employment instantly. Big business and the media have no use for heroism. It scares them. Well, my reason for mentioning the Rocker case again today is that many of the people who are angry about the way Rocker has been treated have been asking the same question I've heard so often before. And that question is, what can we do? How can we fight back? And of course, I've talked about this question on several earlier programs. I've answered various aspects of it, but I believe it's worth talking about a lot more. And so we'll do that a bit today. You know, different people look at the question in different ways. There are some people who see the problem only in a very nearsighted way. They see only the specific irritants John Rocker complained about. They see the queers with AIDS. They see the black criminals. They see the overweight welfare moms. They see and hear the dark swarms of jabbering aliens in our cities, and that's all they see. John Rocker asked Sports Illustrated, "How the hell did these people get in this country?" And many of the people who write to me want to know, "How do we get all of these unpleasant creatures out of our lives?" Sometimes they try to solve the problem one or two unpleasant creatures at a time by shooting at groups of them on street corners from a moving vehicle. That may relieve personal frustration, but it doesn't go very far towards solving the problem, and I do not recommend that approach. They breed too fast. They're coming across our borders too fast. and conditions are so bad where they're coming from that shooting a few of them on our street corners doesn't scare them enough to slow down the flood. They're accustomed to that sort of thing. In order to make an intelligent decision as to what to do about the problem, we need to focus on the flood itself and on those who are keeping the floodgates open, rather than on the individual members of the flood. We have a government which does not enforce its own immigration laws, even in the face of a substantial majority of the population which wants the laws enforced. The essential fact, however, is that a very influential minority doesn't want to slow down the flood of wretched refuse from the third world. And this influential minority has a stranglehold on the government through its control of the mass media. But you knew that already. Now, there are several ways of approaching the problem. We can approach it in an introverted sort of way and ask ourselves why our people have permitted the problem to arise in the first place. Why did we permit the Jews to set foot on this continent? Once they were here, why did we permit them to take over our media of news and entertainment? Why did we permit them to take over our schools and to change the way in which we raise our children? Why have we let them undermine our family structure and pervert our values? Why have we permitted them to use us to wage their wars for them? Why were we so lacking in vigilance, so soft and undisciplined, so credulous, so confused and divided? Why didn't we have honest and hard and capable leadership? Those all are worthwhile questions, and ultimately they need to be answered carefully and completely. But we already know the answers to these questions in rough outline. We already know why we were and are soft and undisciplined and confused and unwilling to put up an effective, organized resistance to the Jews. We also know that it will take us generations to become strong and tough and disciplined again as a people, and that we cannot even begin that task except in small groups until after we have dealt with the Jewish problem in other ways. We can, of course, go off in small groups and try to do our own thing even now. But in the long run, we cannot escape from the fate of the rest of our people. If we succeed in establishing a healthy community anywhere on earth, the Jews will come after us the same way they went after the Serbs, using the portion of our people still under their control to do the dirty work. We are engaged in a race war to the death, to the last man and woman. The Jews understand that quite clearly. We had better understand it too. So for the time being, an introverted solution to our problem isn't feasible. We have to tackle instead the external aspects of our problem. We have to tackle directly the problem of the Jewish control of the minds of our people until we are strong enough to put a monkey wrench into the Jewish mechanism of control. Once we have wrecked their propaganda machinery, all sorts of new options open up for us. And so for now, our problem is to become strong enough to wreck the Jewish mind control machinery. Before I proceed with that subject, however, let's note that many people are approaching the problem in other ways. Some concerned Americans are organizing single-issue pressure groups. Some people opposed to the government's current immigration policies, for example, are tackling the immigration problem through a combination of public education and lobbying. Their aim is to persuade the government to enforce its current immigration laws in order to halt the influx of illegal aliens, and then to modify the laws in order to reduce the influx of legal aliens from the non-white parts of the world. other people are organizing to oppose affirmative action or to support the Second Amendment or to deal with other very specific assaults on our civilization and our race. And all of these efforts probably are a bit more reasonable than shooting at non-whites on street corners, but only a bit more. They all avoid the central issue of Jewish influence on public policy, the issue of Jewish media control. The people involved in these efforts usually mean well. Many of them actually understand the Jewish role in things, but they are afraid to deal with it. They are afraid of the media. They are afraid of the government. They are afraid of their friends and neighbors and colleagues and business associates who they are sure will turn on them if they are labeled racists or anti-Semites by the media. So these people certainly are more admirable than the couch potatoes who do nothing. Still, they remind me of the old joke about the drunk who is crawling about on his hands and knees in the gutter under a streetlight. A policeman sees the drunk and asks him what he's doing. The man answers that he's looking for his wallet. The cop doesn't see a wallet in the gutter, so he asks, "Did you lose it here?" "No," the drunk answers, "I lost it down at the next corner, but there's no streetlight there." And really, we won't cure the sickness of our civilization if we refuse to recognize the true nature and origin of that sickness and instead spend all of our time and energy treating some other sickness that is more fashionable so that we will not be called names and be shunned by our trendy neighbors. What we must do is deal with the fact that the Jews are able to control the thinking of a majority of the people around us. There are various ways of dealing with that fact. My way is to deal with it directly, to continue building my own means for reaching more and more people, a larger and larger portion of the public, and forcing them to look at reality. Of course, there are many people who can't be forced to see anything. If they don't want to see it, if they are afraid to see it, they'll just ignore whatever you show them. But there still are many of our people who do want to understand. Those are the ones I'm trying to reach, and I am reaching more and more of them every day. Listen, even among the sports fans, even among the Joe and Jill six-packs, there are people who will pay attention to the truth if we hit them over the head with it hard enough. That's what I'm doing with these American Dissident Voices broadcasts and with several other media. And I know that what I'm doing is effective because I can see the response every day, a growing response. Many people who share our understanding believe that my method is too slow. They look at the demographic trends and they come to the conclusion that before a large enough portion of the public is ready to move decisively against the enemies of our people, those enemies will have succeeded with their plan to make all of America look like Times Square, where we are a small minority in the midst of a mass of non-whites. They see the flood of Haitians and Vietnamese and Chinamen and Mexicans pouring into the country while the politicians pretend not to notice lest some potential voter take offense. And they have no patience for a slow method. They work on schemes to wreck the economy, to disable the government, to provoke the non-whites into starting a civil war, anything to wake up white Americans and force them to take some action to save themselves. Well, you know, I also am impatient. If I knew some way to pull the plug on every refrigerator and every television receiver in the country, if I knew something I could do to make 100 million white Americans hungry and cold and desperate, I certainly would do it. I would like very much to see tens of millions of white Americans become uncomfortable and frightened and begin looking for answers, and without television receivers to provide false answers for them. But I don't know how to do that. If some of the impatient people out there know how to do it, then please do it soon. I will applaud you. But don't just complain that my method is too slow. I am, of course, trying to make progress as rapidly as I can. I am trying to build the size of my audience, and I am trying to use more media for my message, not just these radio broadcasts and the internet, but also various print media and music. And I do know that a great many more people are listening now and paying attention to than just a couple of years ago. And now I will tell you something very important and very positive. I have said this before, but perhaps not recently. The process of reaching people with my message and provoking a response from them, causing them to do something, is not a linear process, which is to say, we are dealing with a very unstable situation in which a great deal of effort may produce only a small result for quite a while. Then suddenly the result becomes very large with only a little more effort, and one has an avalanche which sweeps away the enemies of our people in a great cleansing rush. Do you think that I am the only white man in America who is concerned about the future of our people, the only white man who understands what is happening and cares enough about it to make an effort to change things? I assure you, I am not. There are dozens, perhaps hundreds more like me in America. For one reason or another, they have not yet spoken out. But they will. And I'm not talking now about all of the people who tell me that they would speak out except that their wives won't let them, or the ones who tell me that they can't speak out because they work for the government and would be fired if it were known that they think politically incorrect thoughts. I'm talking about real men, white men, men for whom doing the right thing, for whom acting righteously is more important than life itself. We still have some men like that in America, despite all the feminized child-raising practices and the soft living and the Jewish brainwashing. And some of these real men understand our situation as well as I do. And some of them have more resources or are better situated than I am for reaching and moving large numbers of people. You know, in Russia, the Bolsheviks, the Jews, systematically weeded such men out of the population. For 70 years, they systematically murdered those they considered potential troublemakers, those who were too righteous, too bold, too independent, those who stood out from the mass. But we Americans haven't undergone such a Jewish weeding process yet. We still have men who understand, who are not afraid, whose thinking is not simply a reflection of what comes from their television receivers, and who care about more than their personal welfare. While other men complain furtively to each other and shiver in fear at the thought of being found out, these real men are becoming angrier and angrier, and they will speak out. They will be heard. You know, speaking out effectively is not just a matter of standing on the nearest street corner and shouting into the wind. It requires a little planning, a little prearrangement. There are many ways of speaking out, of sending a message, and not all of them are verbal. To do it effectively, however, does require care and forethought. And there are strong, righteous men who are engaged now in forethought, in planning, in preparing themselves to be effective. First one will be heard, and then dozens, and then the avalanche will come. There will be great honor to the first, and honor to the others also. And even in this degenerate era, real men value honor. They covet it. They will give up everything else for it. When one steps forward and makes himself heard, the others will hurry to speak also, lest they be last and not gain as much honor as they might. And even the couch potatoes will listen. Even the sports fans will turn away from their ball games and pay attention, because even they have a dim understanding that things are not as they should be. Even they are not simply the happy, carefree, thoughtless consumers portrayed by the controlled media. The media bosses and the politicians and the rest want us to believe that everyone, or at least every decent, right-thinking person, was horrified by John Rocker's comments about New York City. But in fact, millions of ordinary white people, including couch potatoes and sports fans, agreed with him. Their priorities may be all wrong. They may have no sense of personal honor. They may believe many of the lies they are told by the media. They may be worthless by most standards. But even they sense the rottenness which is pervading our world. It may take a lot to catch and hold their attention, but the time is coming soon when enough of our people will be speaking out in one way or another that even the couch potatoes and sports fans will listen and agree. The avalanche will come. Meanwhile, there is much which can be done and should be done. If, for example, you believe that my method is too slow, then help me go faster. I want very much to begin using new media for my message. I want to expand into video. I want to show people things while I'm talking to them. We could reach and move many more people if this were a video message instead of merely an audio message. Do you have video skills? Are you a cinematographer, a video editor, an experienced director or script writer? If you are, then stop whatever you are doing now and come work with me. I need you. Together, we'll knock the couch potatoes right off their couches. We'll knock the sports fans right out of the bleachers. Do you have money to support a video production program? $100,000 will get us started. $1 million will keep us going for a year. Talk to me about what you can do to support our video effort. We can even use donated equipment, studio lights, cameras, monitors, dollies, wireless microphones, and other professional quality sound equipment. People, talent, money, equipment. That's what it takes. But the time is here now when these things should be forthcoming. Let's not be bashful. Let's not wait any longer. Let's do now everything that our resources will permit us to do effectively. So let's move now. Let's prepare the way for the avalanche. Thanks for being with me again today.